Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, I am Eric Estep.
And I'm Scott Reevely.
Welcome back to another episode of City on a Hill. And in the intro, you've probably heard that we say we want to help people be a citizen of heaven while a citizen of the United States. And we want to spend some time to talk about, well, what does that context even mean? How do we even do that? We talked through the biblical theology of kingdom. We talked through creation, fall, redemption, restoration. We talked about how our hope can be aimed towards the kingdom. And practically, and you can agree with me or not, Scott, that that means we are ambassadors here. We're not just citizens here, but we're ambassadors for a different kingdom. And one, someone needs to know where they're sitting if they're going to be an ambassador. They need to know the context in which they live. They need to know how those things look and work. But predominantly, and I hope no one loses this throughout this episode or however many episodes this will be, an ambassador doesn't lose sight of the fact that their main citizenship, their main identity is the country to which they belong, not the country in which they're sitting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really important to, I mean, you would expect an ambassador to understand the government of the country that they are, living in or representing to. And so you would expect them to know a ton about the context and the people and all of that. And some of it is, all right, if we're ambassadors of a foreign kingdom, kingdom of heaven, what do we need to know about the kingdom here? That's right. Really what this podcast is about. So that's a question that Eric, you'll probably start working on here. How's that?
Yeah, I'm just going to be really nerdy and start way back. But I think one of the helpful things is that the Bible assumes we live in different places and in different allotted periods or boundaries. In Acts 17, Paul even notes it. He says, and he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling places or dwelling place. And that's a helpful thing to realize, is that different Christians, different people of God throughout history have lived in different periods and have lived in different boundaries. And it's really easy to get stuck in the context you know and place that in emphasis over everything else. But there's a bunch of different contexts. There's a bunch of different ways people have been organizing themselves since the dawn of time.
Well, I'd go even farther, I think, Eric, and just say that, what this says is that God is sovereign over where you are planted. Mm. And so it's not like, again, we talked about, these aren't the good old days. Well, you don't want to long for another place either, or another system either. God's put you where he's put you. And I think that's the beauty of this Acts 17 passage. Mm. And so he's put you here. And what are you going to do here? That's the question.
Right. That's good. That's good. So we often, I at least was considering naming this podcast dual citizenship. Because we are citizens of heaven, citizens of the kingdom of God, but also citizens of, we happen to be citizens of the United States. And that's how we're going to kind of talk through this. One thing I want to note before we get going, we talked about Augustine. I don't remember how many episodes that was. But Augustine talked about the city of God and the city of man. So when we talk about dual citizenship, we're not talking about being dual citizens of the city of God and the city of man, because those are opposed to each other in an unreconcilable way. We are citizens of some earthly place, For instance, we both live in West Lynn, so we are citizens of West Lynn, citizens of Oregon, citizens of the United States. But that does not mean we belong to what Augustine would call the city of man, because that's something in opposition to the city of God, which is the kingdom to which we're aimed.
Well, that's so great. Now I don't have to read the city of God, city of man. Thank you.
There's so much more in the city of God than that.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought you saved it.
It's 1,200 pages, remember?
I know it is. I thought maybe you just saved me from having to read it.
Right. Nope, you have to do it. I can give you an abridged version that's helpful. But
okay.
So if we were to go back, obviously, in that biblical theology, we talked about creation and then fall. In the garden at creation, things are going well. There's connection with God. And then the fall happens, and relationship with God is broken. Relationship with people is broken. And from that moment on, we have been organizing ourselves. We have been organizing ourselves in ways to confirm protection, to make sure that we can make sure good things happen to our little community. We've been doing this in many different ways, and all of those ways are approximate systems for curbing evil, for providing protection, for providing for the common good. And Romans 13, 1 Peter, the things we talked about the last several episodes, all of those are pointing to those different systems that we have created as image bearers of God to meet those specific ends. And like we talked about in that fall piece, you can look at any system and there's probably some good to it. There's probably, because image bearers made the system, there's some things that would point to the good, the beautiful, or the true, or some wisdom there. And likely, every time, there's also going to be some brokenness associated with those systems. And that's something just to be aware of. Whatever context you sit in, it's not all good and it's not all bad. We are image bearers that are broken, and thus the systems we make have good and bad in them.
Would you, you would even go so far as to say that there, you know, if say my party was all the way in charge, you would still say it's not all good, but it might be, there'd still be some bad in there.
Wait, I need to organize this. You're talking in negatives.
Well, I am. So I'm just thinking, you just said there's good and bad. And, you know, I think a lot of us, you know, vote or, you know, express our opinion as though if, you know, things went my way, then they'd all be good. Mm. And you're saying that even if things go all my way, they're not going to be good? Is that some of the implication of what you just said?
I think
said?
So, yeah. Yeah.
So I should be a little more humble, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, you're leading the question for sure. Leading the witness. But no, I think that's true. There needs to be some humility when we're evaluating systems. And I'm talking about systems of government, especially because we're so familiar in a just a contextual way to our system. So we assume it's just going to be great. And if we just have the right people in charge of that system, everything's going to be gravy. No, it's not going to be a gravy, because no matter what person you put in charge of that system, except for one, Jesus, no matter who you put in that system, they're broken people with broken desires, broken passions, broken affections. I just got done preaching through Jesus' temptation in Matthew 4. So I'm very aware that there's temptation in this world. And especially if you give people a power and authority, there's temptation to use it in ways that are not always good and not always wise. So yes, just putting your friends in power doesn't mean things will go well. Let me jump to Plato. Why not? I was trying in the past several years, trying to find a place to figure out a good organization. When I dig into something, I want to understand something, and I wanted an understanding of how all systems work. And was searching around and finally found Plato. Who knew? He wrote about Socrates, and Socrates in the Republic laid out a system of how governments work. And the way Socrates talked about all systems is that it starts with this ideal and it devolves into his last category is tyranny. And depending on where you are on that spectrum, you're aimed more for ideals or not, and you follow different things. If you've read The Republic, you know he is talking about, often he wants to talk about philosopher kings. He said the ideal setup would be philosopher kings. They know how to fight so that you can have people protect the people. They're going to have enemies, and you need someone who will protect, but they're also philosophers. They desire to seek wisdom. And frankly, that's a pretty good setup. If you can come up with people that are seeking wisdom and can defend, those are good people to have as leaders. So he said that'd be the ideal. You have people that are desiring to find wisdom, and they should be the leaders. If it devolves from that, you go, and he called that'd be aristocracy in his view. If you fall from that, you'd go to something called timocracy. And timocracy comes from the Greek word for honor. So if they're not pursuing wisdom, they're probably pursuing honor. And in that system, the people in charge, they'd be ones pursuing honor. Sparta would be a good example of this in ancient government. From there, it devolves into oligarchy. And the oligarchy are those that have the property. So the main driver is who owns stuff, who owns land. And those people would be in charge of the government. And their main driver will be money, will be property, whatever. It devolves from there into democracy. We're all familiar with democracy. But Socrates doesn't talk about democracy in the gilded terms that we usually talk about it. He calls that a love of pleasure. So if everyone has a say in what's going on, and this is a broad democracy, not like necessarily we have in America, the goal is going to be pleasure. The goal is going to be, I want what I want, so I'm going to aim this government towards what I want. So pleasure, your stomach is going to be your guide in that type of situation. And then the final step in this devolution would be tyranny. Because if you have everyone in a democracy desiring to fill their passions, desiring to fill what they want, eventually someone will take hold of that and say, oh, I'll give you what you want. And they say, okay, what do we need for you to give us what you want? Oh, just give me power and I'll give you what you want. And then you have tyranny, and you've completed that that progression down into tyranny. So that's how he talked about the five potential systems.
So do you agree with him on that?
I thought I did.
Okay.
I like the progression a little bit, because we're talking about the danger in any system. No matter what system you're in, you can be pulled either direction. And it, except for his philosopher king ideal, which I think he would admit is an ideal, and we can't really have it. Any of these things can slip. So it's not just a given that we make a system and it's going to stay that way. And his is constantly just moving down the list. So I think that progression is helpful, but I don't think we start with one and then move down to the others. I think some things happen outside of this progression. And then I read Aristotle, and he had a similar idea. So he said there are three types of systems. You have a monarchy, one person in charge. You have an aristocracy, multiple people in charge. And then you have a constitutional government, which is kind of democracy, but it's more important about what is written down. These laws are important. And then he says there's three perversions of those things. So if you have a perverted monarchy, you have a tyranny. If you have a perverted aristocracy, you have an oligarchy, which is that land piece instead of that honor piece or wisdom piece. And then if you have a perverted constitutional government where it was about laws, he just calls it a simple democracy. It's not about laws. We're back to that passion thing, those affections, those pleasures. I think that's pretty helpful, looking at it that way. There are some good, approximate good, and let's emphasize that. There are some approximate good ways of organizing ourselves, and there are perversions of those. And I think we can see all of those in history, in modern times. What do you think? I've just rambled on with ancient philosophy for a little bit.
Well, you gave me the Cliff's Note versions of Plato and Aristotle and Augustine, which I appreciate. So you've saved me a ton of reading here. But it does seem like, you know, at least they're expressing the probability, shall I even say, that any system's going to break down. That there is no perfect system, and the system in its perfection is probably not attainable by imperfect humans. And, you know, I mean, I was just even, oligarchy is kind of a fun word to read and fun word to say, but, you know, I mean, even some of the things that we have, you know, in the public arena today that are talking about privileged classes and all of this are, you know, in some respect, I imagine, remnants of an oligarchy where some have, some people had land and therefore power, or they had wealth and therefore power. And, you know, it just, those things show up, you know, and there's nothing new under the sun in some regard.
Yeah. And that's helpful. I find those little historical surveys, if you will, helpful in reminding me that all is not new under the sun. There is something, and we've talked about this a little bit, there is something exceptional to the country we live in the fact that it's kind of an exception in some regard to what's come before, but some of the same temptations are there. Some of the same brokenness can be there. It's going to reveal itself in different ways. But that's just helpful rather than just having our blinders on and being focused on a very small sliver of what's going on. It's helpful to know that there's been a lot of broken people and a lot of broken systems and a lot of temptations towards perversion for the entirety of mankind after the garden.
And the slip from, I like how Plato and Aristotle put democracy near the bottom of their ideal list, in part because it's driven by appetite. And, you know, the next step is tyranny, because somebody is going to promise to take care of somebody's appetites a little better. And so there is a, I think there is a good warning for Americans there that, you know, there's no guarantees that what we have is going to stay like it is, because, yeah, we're a few decisions away from tyranny, I suppose.
Right. Yeah, especially in that progression. And I think what's interesting, at least in the way America started, is we were very concerned about monarchy, right? We were aware of the monarchy piece. So we wanted to set up a system that was explicitly not a monarchy. But even in that, it was, well, we need to have someone that can execute the laws. And it's interesting now, this is a tidbit that whatever, people can skip ahead if they want. But when deciding, what are we going to call this person that is the executive, they use the term president, which was a diminutive term, not diminutive, but very small. It's big now because we use it all the time, but a president, someone who presides, is just the person that presides over a meeting. It wasn't to be this exceptional title that put a bunch of pomp and circumstance around. One writer says we should be saying presidant to just emphasize the smaller role that was intended with this, because we didn't want a monarchy. We were very aware of the problems with monarchy, so let's not do that. I just find that stuff interesting.
Well, it is interesting because that's, you know, the way, especially around election seasons, presidential election seasons, it's certainly treated as though we're somehow electing a monarch, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, definitely. So those are the different, I just described a bunch of governmental systems. And obviously there can be a lot of nuance underneath each of those. We could pick apart different countries now and decide, is it 80% an oligarchy? Is it 10% a democracy? Whatever. But those are the basic categories. I think one other distinction that's worth talking about is that there is a difference. There's a difference between politics and governance and partisanship. Which I think that those nuances get lost. When you're talking about governance, you're talking about the administration and action of a system. And if you have a monarchy, the governance is done through a king. If you have a strict and complete democracy, that governance is done through everyone getting together and saying, okay, we need to get across this river. How are we going to get across the river? Are we going to build a bridge? Are we going to make a ferry? Are we going to teach our horses how to swim? And the democracy, everyone would get together at the town square and vote yay or nay for whatever action. That would be how the governance is executed. So that's governance. Politics is something different. Politics is, this is from Oxford English Dictionary, the activities involved in getting and using power in public life, being able to influence decisions that affect a country or a society. So politics comes from the Greek word for city, which is polis. And it's how people get and use power. So we often talk a lot about politics and the machinations of our system, because that's what usually makes the news. The governance doesn't usually make the news. The power plays and the compromises and the giving and taking, those are the politics. Those are the things that usually make the news, but it's different than governance. Sometimes you get the politics and the governance and those can get crosswise with each other, but they're separate.
And then why do you think that's an important distinction?
One, I think it's helpful to keep those separate, because not all of governance is politics. Not all of governance is maneuvering for power or brokering for compromise or making sure that a particular party gets into place. Some of making sure the city runs well is making sure that water keeps running in the pipes. Governance is making sure people keep picking up the trash. All those things that we don't really think about, because if they're running well, they don't make themselves known. They just work. The lights keep working. I'm just picturing, I mean, we just went through a storm, right? And the water kept running because the friends we have in the city of West Lynn kept lugging batteries up the hill to make sure the pump had power so that the water pressure continued in the city of West Lynn. That's the execution of governance. That's those little things going on. That has nothing to do with politics. The politics has already happened at that point. The politics will happen with the city council, maybe maneuvering back and forth. And how do you get three votes to make sure that we even buy batteries to make sure we have them ready for the pump? So they're different. They're related, but they're different. And I think it's important because politics gets all of the headlines usually. And we end up just getting angry with everyone because nothing works. It's always political. Well, to some degree, it has to be political. But that's different than the governance side.
Well, I think the other thing about that is that politics is in service of governance. What you really need in a city, what you really need in a state or country, is good governance. Mm-hmm. And somehow you've got to arrive at that. And you arrive at that through decision-making and the way that, people form coalitions or get, gain power somehow. Mm. And so politics is part of the equation that gets you to good governance.
Right.
And that's really what we would love, is to be well governed.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good. And our system lends itself to more emphasis on politics probably, because there's so many more opportunities to play, as it were.
Well, to have your say. People get more say. So there's, it's more political in that respect.
Right. And lastly, all of those things are different than partisanship. To be a partisan is to care, to be a supporter of a particular party. We have the Republicans and the Democrats and the Independents and the Libertarians and the Green Party and Working Families Party. I'm trying to come up with all the ones I can think of. To be a partisan is to be a supporter of a particular party or cause. So again, that's those players, those partisan players are often, if not likely, the ones involved in the politics in a particular system. But again, to be political is not necessarily to be partisan. Those are distinct as well. You can be trying to get influence towards a particular end and not at all be aiming towards representing your party. It could just be you care about a specific idea, so you're going to do the politics to make sure that that idea is the one that's chosen rather than something else. Or you could be all about party and you're trying to use politics to only get power for your party. So we don't need to dig in that too much, but I think that's helpful because I just hear a lot of mixing of those terms that makes it harder to even talk about what we need to talk about. People say, oh, it's all political. Well, do you mean it's about government? Do you mean it's about the parties? Politics is the catch-all for everything. And they're separate terms at play.
Yeah, and I mean, it's always helpful to have your definitions and understand your terms. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's worth bringing up and worth having definitions on the table.
Right.
Even though it largely is political. I mean, a lot of the things that we are stressed out about or end up talking about or we see in the news, you know, it's all political. Well, those are largely political because they're the ones that get the most press and mm-hmm. things. So. Mm-hmm.
And we want to know those terms because we want to be versed in the language of the city in which we live, because if we're going to be ambassadors, we need to be able to talk well into the context that we're trying to speak to. So that's why we're talking about this. I think we can call that a wrap for today. We've given a history or philosophy lesson. That's really not the goal. The goal is to help people be good ambassadors. So I hope that's helpful in that regard. We'll wrap it up for today. And we'll dig in more to our context next time. I want to remind you before we go, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and rate us. We would love those 5-star reviews. That helps the algorithms show us to other people. If you find what we're doing helpful, a review would go a long way, as would just sharing with a friend. Text them the link. Say, hey, this is helpful. I'm learning things I didn't know. And that'd be great. If you have questions, send them to podcast@newlifenw.com. And we look forward to the next conversation.